Good morning, and welcome to WHTC Money Matters, the show that dispels the myths, unravels the mysteries, and explains in plain language the world of investing, as well as bringing you sound, common sense financial guidelines and strategies for life. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investment or investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Now, from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group in Zeeland, here are Jack Godfrey, Carrie Cooley, and Brent Kerwecker on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC, WHTC.com, and the WHTC app for your smartphone.
And good morning, West Michigan. This is Brent Kerwecker, and hopefully soon to be joining with me, Jack Godfrey. A little static here, so we're just checking things here a minute. Okay, we're going to get static. Maybe you're not hearing the static, hopefully. But today's topic is going to be divorce in your 50s or divorce later on in life. And so we'll be talking about that later on in the show. But first, let's take a look at the markets this past week. S&P 500, it finished down for the week 0.69%. The Dow finished down the week 0.01%. And the NASDAQ finished down 1.57%. If we look at the last 30 days, the S&P is actually up 6.6%, which is nice to see. The Dow actually up 10.56% for the last 30 days. And the NASDAQ up 3.47% for the last 30 days. So since the end of September, we've been seeing some very positive movement in the markets, which has been good to see. Looking at the 10-year bond, something I like to follow closely here, for the last month, it's down 7.5%, which is good to see if you are someone who is borrowing. That means rates have been coming down a little bit, but obviously, as we all know, rates are up quite a bit, and year-to-date, the 10-year actually up 134%. And Mr. Godfrey has arrived and joining the show. Welcome, Jack.
Hey, I am here today, so thanks, Brent.
I was just going over the markets in review, and I was just checking the indexes.
All righty. So let me just get hooked in here a second. My headphones don't seem to be working this morning, so I'm kind of buzzing.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of static.
So no, that's good. So it's, you know, we have seen some, you know, we've seen a customer statements, you know, I think you reviewed a customer statement up 10 to 12% just since the low of the market.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
That's been good to see. The last October and November has been pretty solid. Obviously, the past week we finished down just a little, but for the most part, broke even.
But you know, when I walked in, you were talking about bonds and, you know, we've been talking a while now about the Barclays Ag, and the Barclays Ag is one that's currently down. It was down 17%, so that's the index that people look at for bonds. It was down 17, now it's down 14 as of 2 days ago. And when you see the index for bonds being down 14%, it's never been down ever 14%. So we're seeing the effect of interest rates being increased, I think, to no avail, and now I think Jerome Powell is going to raise them again 75 basis points. That's what he's saying.
And that surprises me because we've seen inflation come down, we're seeing things slow down, we're hearing about layoffs in the news, and as we've mentioned before on the radio, it does take a good 4 to 6 months for a rate increase to take effect. So boy, I'd be in the camp of saying, let's just take a month off of raising rates and let's see if things are starting to fix themselves.
Housing starts nationwide, 9 months decrease every month.
You know what? I have housing starts here. So since you mentioned that, I'll bring that in.
Yeah.
So we'll start with October existing home sales. Existing home sales fell 6% in October, which is not a surprise with where rates are. Sales are down 28.5% versus a year ago. So we've definitely seen a drop in existing home sales. But then we also also like to watch housing starts. This is new construction, and the housing starts fell 4.2% in October. Starts are down about 9% from a year ago, but this time the drop was both in single family and multi-unit starts. Prior to October, multi-unit apartments had been positive, but we actually seen those come down now.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because we still do not have enough places for people to live. And housing starts slowing down is not good, but you can see where interest rates are. Interest rates are 30-year mortgage north of 6. That's at an all-time high. So we are definitely having a slowdown of the economy, but I don't think it's the slowdown that we wanted. But maybe it is. But we go back to saying, if energy was fixed, this would go away. I think it's 523.
Okay, so
you go to breakfast at Bunker Hill and the trucks are backed in and half of them are diesel.
Yeah,
I mean, half of them are diesel trucks. I mean, wow. I mean, to fill up your truck, $150?
That's exactly, you're exactly right. If we can get energy down, get diesel prices down.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely crazy what's happened to diesel. Fuel oil. There's going to be a fuel oil shortage sooner or later here, and I can't tell you how many customers are complaining to me about fuel oil because it's just ungodly. They got a surprise.
Yeah. It's, well, now we're going into cold season. Obviously, we got lots of snow in the area here, and people are going to see, I'm sure, higher heating bills.
I mean, it's just, it is, you know, I don't know where it's going, but I think you should be talking to your U.S. senators, Stabenow and Gary Peters about this. I think you should write them and call them. I do. Don't get any response. And then Bill Heisgen. Bill Heisgen's been elected. You need to call him and say, we'd like Jerome Powell to stop raising rates. And for you to voice that in a letter to Jerome Powell. I mean, that's what I think.
I absolutely agree with that. So you wanted to talk about
Social Security. Yeah, I just want to talk about Social Security.
But we are getting they are working to fix this.
Okay. Yeah, it's not on our fault by any means. But so let's talk about Social Security in a second. If people are receiving Social Security, you know you're going to be getting a raise soon. It's going to start in the December payment. You can go to your SSA.gov, sign into your account. And then when you sign into your account, you want to be looking at your stuff. And you can print off a thing that says, verification letter. And if you go to your verification letter, it's going to be having your new increase on that letter. And that's very important that, you know, if you want to do that, but it's going to show you what your gross is going to be. So you need to take off your gross, your payment, which is going to show you your 2021 payment, which is Medicare. And then if you're So you take that, so the gross is your new gross for Social Security minus your Medicare, and off of those two is what you're going to be taking out for taxes. Some people don't take out for taxes, but that's going to be your new gross. I looked at both mine and my wife's. My calculation, I think, was correct. My wife's, I don't think, was correct, so I'm going to have to call.
Well, you know, it's always good news when you get a pay increase.
Yes.
The increase is coming because of the higher cost, but it's interesting to think about that. You have to wait a full year to get your pay increase, so obviously you have higher expenses.
Yeah, but it's going to show up in your December check.
But hopefully, if prices come down a little bit, you get a bigger check, it starts to correct the imbalance.
I was listening to the news. It said it's going to be cheaper to go out to eat for Thanksgiving than it is to buy the Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah,
so it's
that.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, it's. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
They're
advertising.
They're advertising. Yeah, I think more and more people are going out to eat. It's just, I think there's probably some ease to it, and you get to enjoy the food without all the labor. Hey, saw a couple interesting surveys this week that I thought I would just mention. One was they asked retirees what they missed most about their work life. 41% of retirees said it was the people and social stimulation, which I get that. And then the other 20% said
Well, yeah.
That makes sense, too. And then I saw one other survey, now that we're after the midterm elections here, it says the 2022 midterm elections cost an estimated $8.8 million. That's a lot of money, a lot of money. And they said that's nearly equal to the combined 2021 GDP of the world's 29 smallest economies. So just the cost of the election would be equivalent to the production of the 29 smallest economies. That's fascinating.
Well, you know, if you take a look at the special election in Georgia, how much is that going to cost the state of Georgia? You know, it's crazy that somebody doesn't win the election by 50, more than 50%. They have a runoff. So, you know, you think these off-year elections where people want to bring up something and they demand a special election, those are pretty costly to the townships, the county, the state, the federal government. To hold those elections and to verify them. So it's crazy what's going on today in terms of election costs. And to get the results quickly, I don't know what's going on with that. But crazy.
And I think for the most part, you see those ads come on and you just flip the channel.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
Is it even money well spent?
Yeah,
that's another topic we're here to talk about.
Well, money and finance, but, you know, there's a lot of people ask us, Brent, in meetings, where have all the people went? And I was just at the Economic Club, Grand Rapids Economic Club, this past week, Monday, and there were people there talking about where all the people went. And the highest, in the last 10 years, the age group 16 to 19, there's been a reduction of 38% in that workforce. And the workforce, you know, what I call it would be regulation creep. You know, I come from an agricultural background, we still own a farm, and when I was probably 12, we had friends that were also 12 helping us bale hay. Well, you can't do that anymore because the government thinks people are going to get killed working for agriculture. So agriculture is one of the main resources we have in Michigan, but regulation creep has caused us to say, well, you shouldn't really be working until you're 18. And then, you know, one of the commentators said, you know, talking to successful people today, how did you be so successful? Well, I started working at 14. And that's a theme throughout, but yet our government thinks that should not be the case.
Hey, we got to take a break, and then we can revisit that for a second when we come back. You've been listening to Money Matters. We'll be right back.
And welcome back. You're listening to Money Matters with Jack Godfrey and Brent Kerwecker, and we believe the static is gone. Thank you very much for fixing that. I know it was probably annoying for you. It was annoying for us.
It was very annoying for us, but you know, we apologize for that, and we're back, so it's good.
Hey, today's show is going to be on the topic of divorce. The actual title is Divorce in Your 50s, but really it's relevant for divorce later on in life.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, you know, we'll read some questions. We'll go through our prepared comments, I guess, but, you know, we could pretty much talk this out along the way, Brent.
Yeah, well, the reason we're doing this show is because of the questions we receive.
Yeah.
So we've
right.
got some questions regarding divorce, and we thought, well, let's do a show on it. So I'll take the first question here, read it to you, Jack. It says, I've been married almost 33 years. We are retired and live on my husband's pension, and I'm too young for Social Security. If we divorce, will I have any rights to part of his pension? Without that, I have no income for a minimum of 6 years. Thoughts?
Well, sure. I mean, it's, one, we don't know this person's age. That's a trigger mechanism. What's the age of this person? Let's talk about divorce here in the grand scale, which we'll cover here with pensions, is... So you've been married for more than 10 years. That is a one line in the sand. If that is the case, then when you retire, you're either going to take your own or some of your husband's if it's larger. So we don't know the age, so we don't know what that's going to be. But as far as the pension, you know, part of the divorce settlement could be collecting a portion, half of his pension, and it depends on, you know, what the settlement is. And so what I like to say to people when you get a divorce is there's got to be a pot of money out there to generate income. And let's just say that, you know, your husband gets $10,000 a year. To generate $10,000 a year, $200,000 has to be up there in the sky to generate 5% to get $10,000 a year. Good math. So you need to say, okay, let's share in that $200,000. That puts that on the table to say, generate my husband's pension of $10,000. I'm just making it up. We have to generate 5%. It's $200,000. So now we're going to split that up of that $200,000. So you bring to the table $200,000 in your investments. He brings to the table $200,000 of his investment. That means your IRAs, your Roth, his IRAs, your Roths. Those all equal out to be $200,000. You also bring to the table joint accounts and joint debt. So now if you split yours and his together, you get $1,000 of his, he gets $1,000 or $100,000 of yours. It doesn't really matter. So then we split up that $200,000 of the pension. And not many attorneys get that, how you divide pensions. And you have to say, how are we generating that $10,000? Because if you're going to split it, either you get half of the $10,000 or you're going to get $100,000 of his stuff. That's how it goes.
You're exactly right. And, you know, in this case, we're talking about divorce. They're both retired. You're going to, likely half of your income is going away because it was a marriage.
Yep.
But your expenses don't get cut in half. So that's a good possibility. You may have to go get some part-time work to fill the gap because you both need housing. You know, you both need to eat, so it's not as if costs get cut in half, but your income gets cut in half.
Yeah, and there's also the next thing is the wife might, and I'm assuming we're talking about the wife here, I don't know that for sure, but the younger person might want to go for alimony.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion there. Yeah. So we had another question on divorce that came in and said, after 3 years of marriage, I'm filing for divorce. I have a 401k and a retirement plan, which I had way before I met my husband. He thinks he'll get half of my 401k and retirement money when he's not paid into either of these accounts. How can I stop him from getting some of my money?
Well, usually here's how it works. I mean, it is he's not going to get half.
Well, that's I think the answer she's hoping to hear.
Yeah, he's not going to get. So all marital assets would be considered only of those portions accrued during the marital assets. That's a pretty common thing here in the state of Michigan.
Well, and of course, with both these questions, we'd always recommend getting advice from an attorney along the way in regards to, you know, legal questions such as that. But yeah, that's our understanding is that if these are assets pre-marriage,
right.
Those are looked at differently than assets accumulated during marriage.
Absolutely. So when we talk about now this person after 3 years of marriage, I'm filing for a divorce. Let's just talk about the one filing for divorce. So you've got the money, he doesn't. Now you're going to maybe get married again. And if that's the case, I would probably recommend a prenup. Just so you've got the money, the next person maybe has more, maybe has less. Prenup might be in the cards for if you decide to get married again.
Yeah, we suggest that with all second marriages, don't we? Because it gets more complicated with second marriages when you come in with assets and potentially children, you know, blended families. So a prenup goes a long way on a second marriage.
And we didn't talk about, must be there was no children involved here.
Well, we don't always get all the details with a listener question, but we appreciate the questions. And so therefore we thought, divorce does happen. I don't think anyone goes into marriage planning on getting divorced, but it does happen, and therefore it's something that then becomes a life event that you need to address, and so let's talk about that.
Right. So, you know, we typically address this when we talk to divorce people, and divorce people are very similar to when a spouse dies. Only you typically would get what the spouse has, but there's also the taxation. When you are a single person, taxes double. They do. And being married, you get the standard deduction, which is 28,000, you might as well say. And a single person, you get half of that, and your taxes double. When I say taxes double, let's just go, when you're single, zero to 10,275, we're talking about 2021 now, it's 10%. Married, zero to 20,550 at 10%. So that is double. Mm-hmm. So people forget about that until they get their taxes done the next year. Also, what you want to think about, if you are getting a divorce this year, 2021.
We're 2022.
I'm sorry, 2022.
Almost 2023.
Yeah, sorry, 2022. You're going to want to file jointly. Get your last year into filing jointly. I know some people don't want it. You know, they don't want to talk to people. They don't want to talk to their ex. But it would behoove you to lower your taxes if you can be civil enough to file jointly.
Yeah, if it's a civil breakup, we've been in situations with clients like yeah. this, and we've been able to help them file jointly that last year. And you're yeah. right, it saves tax dollars, which just means more money for both parties after the split there.
And maybe this is part of what we're going to go through, but we might as well talk about it now, is if you have children, typically in that divorce settlement, if you have two children, one takes the other for the deduction. Or if you have one gets it 1 year, the next person gets it the next year. So deductions for single are less. But if you have a child, that's part of the divorce decree, is who gets the deduction.
Well, let's talk about how retirement accounts are impacted with divorce. So let's start with, we'll go into retirement accounts here. And as part of a divorce settlement, the spouse with a higher balance may need to transfer funds to the other spouse's account.
Absolutely, yes.
Right? Because we're trying to likely divide into a 50-50 situation. In the case of 401k, both spouses would need to file what is called a qualified domestic relation order. For short, people call it QUADRO. So that's something that likely would need to be put together. And that's a court document that spells out how the money will be divided.
Right.
So that's the document on how to divide retirement account.
Yeah, when you see that QDRO, that is exactly what you need. Once you both agree, the judge signs it, you would take that to every one of your accounts. Checking account, savings account, 401k, Roth, whatever retirement account you have, and then that institution, by that document, has to file that with the Division of Assets.
Yep. So that at that point, if let's just say there is a spouse with the higher retirement account balance and has to share some with the other spouse, we recommend at that point in time, once you have that QUADRO, let's pull the money out of the other spouse's retirement account and get it transferred into, you know, your IRA or 401k.
So you also have to think, you know, we're talking about retirement accounts, but you need to figure out the division of property. If you do have property, who gets the house, who pays the other person off? So it's not just retirement accounts when you negotiate. And, you know, we like to have people come to our office so they get a spreadsheet analysis and coaching with people who understand the division of assets. Because lots of times the attorneys will call us for our recommendation. They charge the customer for their advice, but we charge them nothing. We don't charge the attorney, we don't charge you, but it's all about negotiation. And negotiation is that just that word is costly. If you can go into a divorce with signed documents that you've both agreed to, that stops arbitration, that stops attorneys going back and forth. And most divorces, Brent, are fairly easy. But once you get opposing attorneys, they can really complicate it.
Certainly. Amicable, obviously, is always going to be better than those that are in conflict there. But let's talk about pensions. The court typically considers a pension that one spouse earns during the marriage to be a shared asset, too. So if only one spouse has a pension, he or she may wish to offer up other assets with equal value rather than haggle over the pension. But we've had situations where a spouse does get the other person's pension. I know this year alone I've helped two or three in this case they were women, start collecting on former husbands, or I should say ex-husbands, pension plans. And it really wasn't that difficult of a process.
It's not the difficulty of the process. It's always, what are we trying to accomplish not only for you, but for future generations? Because remember, once you, let's just say you do get your husband's pension, maybe we'll talk about that after the break, because it's a little bit more complicated in terms of strategy. So, hey, we're going to take a break right now. You got Brent and Jack here live. Call us, 395-1450, with any calls. Anything you got in your mind, we'll answer. But we're going to be talking about divorce continued on throughout the show. So stay with us. We're back, WHTC, Jack Godfrey here with Brent Kerwacker. We're talking about divorce, and we're talking about pensions. So here's what you need to think about when you want to get the spouse's pension. One, you don't have much money to divide. I get that. My personal opinion is you always want to take the amount that represents the payment of the pension. And the reason you want to do that is because a pension, one, is not guaranteed. We have seen pensions not be paid anymore, and they go to the pension board, which you take 40%. So there is some risk, not all the time, some of the time. And the other thing is you can't inherit a pension to your children. So if you can negotiate the money, get the value of what the pension is when you get the money, that means, again, back to the example of $200,000 at 5% generates $10,000. If that's the pension amount, then take half of that $200,000 and say your husband owes you $200. I'm just making up husband and wife. That's better, Brent.
You're saying try to get a cash,
a dollar
a lump sum.
Because there is
versus
a dollar value to that pension.
Sure, yep.
There is a dollar value to that pension. But pensions are not guaranteed, so you have a little bit of risk there. Not much, but some pensions that I've had with customers, they had to take a reduction.
Okay.
Reduction.
Well, last thing we want to talk about here as we talk about retirement accounts would be Social Security. And if a couple was married for at least 10 years before separating, the ex-spouse will be eligible to apply for monthly benefits worth up to 50% of the higher earner's full retirement age benefit. If the lower earner remarries, however, he or she forgoes that benefit in most cases.
Well, that would be you're trying to get your ex's half, 50%, yep, if the higher is. So if you get married, off the table, what you just said. Otherwise, if you've been married two or three times and you're now divorced, you're single, you can pick.
Yeah, as long as you've been married to each one at least 10 years.
At least 10 years.
Yes,
you
correct.
Can pick who you want to take from.
So let's talk about the higher earning spouse. We're talking about Social Security. So the the spouse that had the higher Social Security benefit, I think a lot of times they think, oh, in a divorce, do I lose half of that? There's no change in their benefit. Their benefit is what it is. Doesn't matter if they remarry, don't remarry, if their ex-spouse remarries, doesn't remarry. It is what it is. It stays the same.
But again, if you divorce, you get to pick your ex's highest. If you're married for 10 years, that's what the line of the sand is 10 years. You've been married to three guys for each 10 years apiece or more. Where that comes into play, though, is death. You know, that sometimes is you don't realize that a spouse is going to die. So we're not only talking about divorce, but some people, Brent, have been married two or three times because their spouse has died. And sometimes, you know, you can get a higher payout from a previous.
Let's talk about beneficiaries. We actually have a story on this we can share, a real-life example that we encountered just within the last few weeks. But likely when you're married, you likely have your spouse as your primary beneficiary.
Yep.
So upon divorce, or if you know you're getting divorced, you're probably going to want to change that beneficiary. But we had, you and I, a couple weeks ago, had a really sad situation where a couple were in the process of getting divorced. They hadn't finalized the paperwork yet. And the husband died.
Yeah.
And had a life insurance policy.
Yep.
And had not obviously changed the beneficiary. And this in this situation, it worked out okay. But the wife, who was soon to be the ex-spouse, did get the life insurance benefit.
Yep.
That worked out okay. Everyone was okay with that because there were kids involved, and it worked out the way it should have. But the point is, if they would have gotten divorced and something would have happened later on, it's possible the husband did not want the life insurance to go to
his ex.
Yeah.
And now,
so it's very important to change beneficiaries.
Yeah. If there's kids involved, then maybe the ex should be getting it to take care of the kids.
I mean, I agree 100%.
Each one of these has merit standing alone. You just can't, we can't tell you there's a hardcore fix or remedy for each one of these. Is you have to be able to realize what's going on with the ex. You know, it's sad when that happens.
You're 100% correct. But the thing is regardless, if you're divorced, your beneficiary is still...
It trumps everything.
It
trumps the trust. So. It trumps everything. But life insurance should be going with part of the settlement.
That's interesting. I guess we've not talked about life insurance in regards to divorce.
No, but some of that is, I've seen it in many cases, and part of the settlement is the ex-wife is still the beneficiary because she has custody of the kids or more than 50-50.
Well, let's continue down the path of financial updates you should make post-divorce. So beneficiary is one, very, very important there. Next one, I would say going in line with that is you probably maybe had a will. Maybe had a trust, and that now needs to be updated really right away.
Yeah, let's just take one at a time. You take the trust, I'll take the will.
Well, go ahead and start with the will.
All right, so let's talk about the will. The will is usually who gets your stuff, who gets the car, who gets the antiques, who gets the Christmas decorations, because some of the Christmas decorations are expensive, who gets the jewelry. All of that adds up in a will. Now, if it's the wife staying that, you know, the ex-daughter gets the jewelry, that doesn't matter once you're a guy and you're back single again. You need to create a new will on who now gets your stuff. And that's what needs to be done right out of the gate.
And with a trust holds assets.
Yep.
So obviously, if you got divorced, assets have now been split. So the trust that may hold assets no longer is correct, needs
Not
to be updated.
Correct.
But also trust, many a times if you have kids, will state your wishes on how your money is dispersed over their lifetimes.
Yep.
And although that may not change, still you likely had a joint trust. And so, again, needs to be updated.
But... the real estate, most people have their property, land, houses, second homes, third homes, where sometimes, Brent, there is split trust. It's in the wife's name, some property, the husband's name, some property. And when that divorce decree comes through, you're going to have to re-register that at the deeds place. And you're also going to have to change your trust. Well, you have to change your trust anyway, but trusts are designed basically for property. The majority of the people use it for a property.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
The other thing would be to close all joint accounts. A lot of times there's joint credit cards, maybe joint bank accounts. I don't know what else comes to mind to you when I say joint, but those are usually the big ones, credit cards, bank accounts.
Yeah. You know, that's probably the number one contested problem is joint accounts. If you suspect, or you're the one creating the divorce, you want to make sure if you have a credit card with your spouse on it, before contemplating divorce or somebody files for divorce and you get the paperwork, you want to cancel every one of those credit cards. Because some of the spouses think that they can just charge up crazy amounts.
But prior to the
divorce.
Yeah, we've seen stories of that.
Yes, yeah, seen plenty. That's usually causes or drains the bank account, the checking account.
That's,
runs up the credit. So those are ones that...
That's good advice.
You have to be careful of cash.
Well, and the other thing is review insurance coverage. We talked a bit about life insurance, but many times there's a higher death benefit on one spouse than the other, and so... potentially you need to change your life insurance amounts, but also you got to figure out health insurance, homeowners insurance, car insurance, So really, you also need to review insurance coverage.
But we skipped IRA accounts.
And we're going to have to go to a break in a minute, so we'll come back we'll start up with IRA accounts in a minute. We'll be right back. You're listening to Money Matters with Jack Godfrey and Brent Kerwecker. Welcome back, listeners, to the final segment of Money Matters. We're going to finish our conversation on divorce and how to split assets and the necessary changes you need to make as part of a divorce. And before the break, Jack, you wanted to bring up IRAs, which we'll take it from there.
Well, IRAs are a division of assets as well. Now, we talked about prior to money coming to the marriage, those are not part of it. So if you've brought your 401k that you've had for 10 years or whatever the amount of time is, those are not subject. It's things are subject what you jointly got together. So let's just talk about division of retirement assets. You know, we talked about closing credit cards, being very, very careful of closing accounts where you both are jointly owned. That's where spouses can be real divisive. And one thing also is retirement accounts. Well, geez, I'm just going to clean my Roth out. I'm of age where I can just take it all out and salt it away someplace. Well, once you get that divorce letter, somebody's filing, you get the other person files, that's a stoppage of taking money anywhere that you've jointly owned.
You're exactly right, and there will be a discovery of asset period. So they'll see the trail if you try to pull money and hide it for
sure. They will see a trail, but that sometimes takes a while once divorce attorneys are both contacted.
But an IRA is individual retirement account, so it's an individual account. It cannot be joint. And there's Roth IRAs and there's traditional IRAs, and there's a big difference when it comes to taxability. And so when looking at dividing assets, $100,000 in a Roth IRA has more value than $100,000 in a traditional IRA because of that taxing factor. The $100,000 in the traditional IRA is truly not $100,000 because as you take money out of there and bring it into your banking account, you'll have to pay tax on it. With a Roth, you don't have to pay tax on it.
But you have to be careful not to be hoodwinked by the other person's attorney. How about if we just line them up and you take some of this and you take some of this? It's cleaner if you just divide up every asset by 50%.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. If one has a $100,000 Roth IRA and one has a $100,000
Roth
IRA,
I'll take the Roth all day long.
That's one of, one of them is disadvantaged, but if you split it 50-50, that's even.
Yeah, that's what it should be for everything. But you have to know the strategy, and sometimes you get new attorneys, they don't really understand things financially, and you sign stuff and your financial advisor says, just what did you do? But once that QDR was done, good luck.
Let's talk about the investments within retirement accounts or even non-retirement accounts. Do they have to sell everything and go to cash to transfer?
No.
I mean, what if you have really good investments that you really like and they're doing really well?
Transfer in kind.
Can you explain what
transfer in kind
means?
That means you hold three stocks. You hold Microsoft and AT&T and let's say one mutual fund, you can split those in half, which we usually do, split those in half and send half to your spouse, and you keep half. Because one, there may be good assets. But sometimes even it gets worse because you have a financial advisor that's licking their chops and says, just take the cash. Well, then because he wants to invest it. Now, you have to understand what you have, what it generates. Because if you're retired, some of these assets generate income. And mom and dad are generating income, and they should be splitting that up. So somebody's got to be talking about your budget. So it gets deeper than just splitting it. It's how are you going to generate the income? And maybe you do need to sell stuff to generate the income that you need. Or going back to what you said before, Brett, you got to get a second job or get a job.
Well, let's talk about, so we've talked about some things you should keep in mind.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how we help couples through this matter. And you've touched on a little bit, but sometimes divorces are amicable. Not
yes,
always, but
yeah.
sometimes they are.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, our preference is to sit down with both.
Yes.
Make a list of the assets and try to help come up with a fair divide that takes care of both both spouses' needs.
If
and we've done that. We've done it successfully.
Yes, I've done that successfully with a multi-million-dollar account, and it took all day. We wrote the asset, the account number, how it's going to be divided, the percentages, and the property, and everything. And it was about 10 different pages they both signed. I witnessed it, and the divorce was very cheap because the judge says, wow. It went through quickly. It was almost like the Tom Brady type divorce. You know, it just went quickly. Maybe before they're getting a divorce and it's done because they had a division of property already done.
In that case, they equally had great amount of wealth prior to the
but
marriage.
But whatever the wealth is, yeah. I'm not saying, yeah. you know, the wealth matters is if you can civilly divide up property.
You're most, exactly right.
You know, the most important thing is, of course, if there's children, you know, children just breaks my heart when they lose their mom and their dad full time. But it's just one of those where, you know, you have to really get down and say, what are we trying to do here?
Well, let's talk about if it's not amicable. Our suggestion is, as a spouse, then on your own, because it's not amicable, go meet with your financial advisor.
Absolutely.
Before you get too far down with trying to create the divorce decree, let's look at the assets. Let's talk strategy and start to line things up to make sure that you end up, you know, coming out of an unfortunate situation, poised as best as possible to rebuild and continue down your plans to, you know, reach whatever the goals are you have in front of you.
And, you know, with that being said, Brent, this is a division of assets. This happens at divorce, but it also happens at death. You know, we had three customers die last month. That's a division of assets. That is a divorce from the living and assuming the assets. So it's the same thing. It's how do we divide assets when there is a change in life?
Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Thank you for listening today. Of course, if you have questions, please call us. We're at 616-931-1223 with Cooley Godfrey Investment Group. You can also email us at cooleygodfrey@lpl.com. Hey, next week's topic, which will be right after the Thanksgiving holiday, will be Social Security facts you should know. So please join us next Saturday for some fun facts about Social Security. And we wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. You've been listening to Money Matters with Jack Godfrey and Brent Kerwecker.
Thanks for listening to Money Matters on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC. If you need help with your personal financial needs or goals, please call us at 616-931-1223 or Google Cooley Godfrey Investment Group in Zealand. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investment or investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Join us next week for Money Matters on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC.